to Paranormal Radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We're on the Paracast this week, and our co-host Chris O'Brien is on special assignment, so he won't be with us, but next week, tentatively, we'll do a special episode about his new book called Stalking the Herd. Okay? That's going to be a fascinating discussion. This is over 565 pages exploring the cattle mutilation phenomenon. Now, we have two guests today. I'm not going to get into that topic except insofar as it's covered in a certain magazine they both have or now do represent. And that is Fate Magazine. Fate Magazine is, I guess, the longest surviving publication about the paranormal, going back to like 1948. And the people joining us this week, Phyllis Galdi, who's the editor-in-chief and publisher, and my old friend Jerome Clark, who actually worked at Fate for a number of years. It's kind of interesting, Jerry, how you and I went into journalistic-related career paths after we finished school, and I presume we're almost nearly the same age, which will not be mentioned on the air because nobody normally counts that high. But with me, after going to school, I went into radio and began to specialize in journalism. But you got associated with Fate Magazine. How did that come about?
Well, when I was a kid, my folks and my brother and I were on a vacation in the Black Hills of South Dakota. We went into a magazine store, or actually a drugstore. It had quite a collection of magazines and paperbacks. And I saw the November 1960 issue of Fate. And I had heard of it before, but I had never seen it. So I bought it, and I was enthralled. I subscribed immediately, and I have read Fate since November 1960, virtually every issue. So I have a long history. And at one time, I was hired at Fate Magazine. I was associate editor, and then I became the full editor, the senior editor. And that was just before Fate was sold to Llewellyn Publications in St. Paul, and that's where Phyllis comes into the story.
Let's be more detailed about Fate, though. How long did you work for them before the sale was completed? And also, I guess we never really clarified this, you were a reader of the magazine. How does the reader become the employee?
Well, I started writing for Fate in the 1970s. In the early 1970s, so the editorial staff and the publisher, namely Curtis and Mary Margaret Fuller, knew who I was. They knew I could write. And so in 1970, I moved to Chicago from Moorhead, Minnesota, with a girlfriend. And I was looking for a job, and I thought, well, I'll go over and see if I can get a job at Fate. And they hired me. But my Chicago life lasted only less than a year, and I moved back to Minnesota. I was in Chicago in 1976, and I visited the Fullers, and they asked me if I was interested in having my old job back. And I was, so I moved back to Chicago. I worked from August 1976 till February 1989. So I spent a good chunk of my working life at Fate Magazine.
Now, just to do a comparison, I don't know there's any place I worked at for 13 years anywhere. No way. And not in the kind of businesses I've been in. You don't work 13 years at anything. Okay. We don't want to get into the technical details, but it was possible to make a living wage working for a magazine like that?
Yeah, I wasn't getting rich, but I was, you know, decently compensated. I was able to support a young family. Yeah, I have no complaints about how I was treated. The Fullers are very good to me.
Okay, so why did they sell out?
The magazine was dying, basically. The circulation had slumped, and Kurt Fuller was philosophical about it. He said, well, Fate had a pretty good run, and nothing lasts forever. And they had hoped to sell it to Hugh Hefner, who was talking about doing a slick kind of pop science magazine in competition to Bob Guccione's Omni magazine, except that Hefner had this idea of having a higher, you know, anomaly and paranormal content. But by the time the Fullers were ready to sell Fate magazine, Hefner had lost interest. Nobody seemed interested except Llewellyn Publications and Carl Weschke, who was head of it. The Fullers didn't like whiskey very much, and they didn't want to sell to him. But finally, there was no other offer, and Fate sold it to Whiskey at, I think, kind of a bargain basement price. They just wanted to get it off their hands, and they were lucky to get any money for it at that stage. Now, this is the late 1980s.
Was there something about Llewellyn that made them seem like a less than ideal buyer for Fate?
Well, the Fullers weren't occultists. They didn't really have much time for, you know, occult doctrines, theosophy, magic, and those sorts of things. I mean, they had advertisers who were oriented at that. But Kurt Fuller actually came from a science background. His major interest in life was science, and I think that he saw anomalies in the paranormal as things on the fringes of science as opposed to the heart of the occult. And they thought that a lot of what Whiskey was doing was just junk. And they didn't really want Fate to go in that direction. And they wanted some kind of, you know, restraint on the content so that it didn't go too far to the extremes that it was. Mary Fuller always used to say, she would tell me, she said, we don't have to believe it ourselves, but it has to be capable of belief. That was her editorial philosophy.
Well, meaning, so, therefore, that has to be something that at least sounds credible. It's a theory that's well researched.
That a reasonable person could believe, yes.
Okay. Now, after the purchase took place, now you're no longer associated with them. Did the magazine go further downhill or what?
Well, I will leave that to Phyllis to address.
Well, Phyllis, you've now been called into action. So Phyllis Galdi, currently the one who owns the publication. What happened with Fate after Llewellyn took it over?
Well, that was an interesting time. I was hired, I think, about 85 or 86 at Llewellyn as a book editor. And there was all kinds of hubbub and excitement and driving down to Chicago. Donald Michael Craig was the first editor-in-chief under the Llewellyn ownership of Fate. And I remember the excitement as a new editor, book editor, probably the only one at the small time of Llewellyn. I was so excited. I wanted to work on Fate. I, begged to be an editor for it. I wrote a first article about elephants, about their psychic abilities or how intuitive they are. Yeah, it was just a lot of excitement, and Carl Alt Weschke always wanted a magazine. He loved magazines, but kind of he had bad luck with previous magazines, Occult, the Gnosticon, and similar kinds of magazines. But anyway, it was great excitement, and I finally got to be an editor and moved over working on the Fate part of it rather than the book part of it. And both Don Craig and I tried to be very careful to keep Fate pure. Carl wanted it to be an advertorial for Llewellyn Books and turn it in that direction. But I have to say that both Don and I were really clear in our intent that it should stay mostly true to its origin. So yeah, we had a few fights on our hands, and we tried to be diplomatic, and finally we got quite a bit of control over the editorial content. So we tried to keep it clean, and of course Jerry was still writing a column. We had four or five different columns at that time, and yes, it continued to lose money. Llewellyn lavished a lot of money on it that they spent poorly. I mean, they gave this one designer $10,000 just to make a new logo on the front page.
Let's go into more of that. $10,000 for the logo. $10,000 for the logo. How about that? Phyllis Galdi from Fate Magazine. Jerome Clark, formerly from Fate Magazine. And a lot more to come. You're in
the Paracast.
Neighbors, are you tired of dealing with a slow web hosting provider? Well, check out A2 Hosting and their screaming fast Swift server platform. They even have SSDs that load pages 300% faster than the competition. Ready to give your site a speed boost? Well, tell you what, neighbors, head on over to A2Hosting.com. That's A2Hosting.com. Check out their Prime Hosting account. And get this, neighbors, they're even giving you an exclusive 25% off discount for all our listeners. 25%. And remember, their Guru Crew support team is standing by 24/7, 365 days a year to answer any of your questions. Now, to get the discount, use the coupon code GENE when you check out.
Hi, this is Gary Cooper with Midas Resources Gold and Silver. Government shutdown, inept politicians, entitlements, looming Obamacare. The death of the U.S. dollar as the global reserve currency is what nobody wants to acknowledge. We have a debt bubble that cannot be paid and will eventually crash the dollar. If you're concerned about keeping your money, why not consider storing your wealth in gold and silver? Call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237. Extension 130. Together we'll discuss your options of buying gold and silver. Again, the global elite have plans for your money and it doesn't include you. So call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 130, and we'll discuss your options of buying precious metals. Also, I can send you information on how you can roll over your IRA or 401k into a precious metal IRA. Again, don't get caught with money in your account when the dollar crashes. Call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 130.
Great news, pure water lovers. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has a special discount offer for all GCN listeners. You can't do better than a Big Berkey for economy. For only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. There's none better than a Big Berkey for emergency preparedness as a backup water source. And you just can't beat a Big Berkey to remove dangerous chlorine, all types of fluoride, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and unhealthy byproducts from municipal water. Berkey water filter systems are even powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. For the gold standard in water filters, get a Big Berkey at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And all GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. For details, call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey water filters, for the love of clean water.
Question. Could too many GMO foods and toxins be overloading your digestive and immune systems? Answer, yes. If you're searching for a powerful detox that's gentle enough to use every day, use Pro-EM1 from Terraganics. Pro-EM1 is a powerful liquid probiotic that uses good bacteria to suppress pathogens and gently eliminate toxins from your body. A healthy digestive system will cleanse and remove toxins, support weight loss, improve absorption of food nutrients, and aid in controlling yeast and other infections. Pro-EM1 is made with only non-GMO and certified organic ingredients, has no preservatives, and is dairy, soy, wheat, and gluten-free. Pro-EM1 is the key to your digestive health. Order Pro-EM1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com. Spelled TERRAGANIX.com. Or call toll free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Also available through Amazon Prime. Pro EM1 from Terraganics. Life's getting better.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
You know, Phyllis Galdi does such a good job saying the Paracast. We may have to add her to our special recording where we're going to feature just the people who do it so well, like Nick Redfern and Bryce Sable and Phyllis Galdi and a few others. And Chris. Chris has a number of different voices he does it with. We're talking primarily about Faith Magazine, about the history of the publication, the ups and the downs, and we'll get more into the modern history in a while. So, Phyllis, before we broke, you were telling us here that the folks at Llewellyn were not above investing in Faith, but they really didn't know how to invest in it, like spending $10,000 on a new logo. But what about promotion of the magazine?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch your last statement.
Okay, sure. What about just promotion? promoting the magazine to get more readers.
They did a lot of promotion, and they really thought that Fate would have a wonderful future on the newsstand, which is why they spent the money for a new flashy logo. Yeah, they dumped quite a bit of money on it. It was a toy for Carl, and it still had some pretty decent articles. And by the way, Jerry was still writing his column, as I mentioned, and Jerry is still doing the most intelligent book review we have in the book review section. So Jerry, Mr. Clark, is still involved with Fate. And we're honored to have him helping us because he is the voice of reason and wisdom and discernment and knows more about the books than anybody else.
Well, since we're swapping compliments, Phyllis, let me say that I really admire what you're doing. And one thing that many people associated with Llewellyn didn't get that you did was what made and makes Fate an appealing magazine. And your Fate, under your editorship, really carries on that tradition honorably. And it's an honor for me to be in every issue with my book reviews. I really like being there and like being able to make some contribution to the well-being of the magazine.
No, we appreciate it very, very much.
They're investing in getting more newsstand distribution. Now, I know something about the other end of it because I've worked with other publishers who have newsstand magazines. And the one thing we all learn is unless you have humongous amounts of money to get special presentation and placement, it's a very difficult place to try to work.
Exactly. And it was the beginning of the downfall. The golden age was over for magazines. As we know, so many have crashed during the last 10, 15 years. So Fate didn't have that kind of money to have that premium placement. And then I think Sandra, Carl's wife, finally prevailed upon him to sell the magazine. And anyway, I had quit to start my own publishing company in 94. I was working on my own publishing book publishing company. Then in 1999, Sandra Weske called David Godwin, my partner, and myself to come back and help while they were in the process of trying to sell it. So we said, sure, we'll do it. So David and I came in there, and then I saw the incredible waste. It's like $250,000 they were spending on payroll and extra people, unnecessary people, and huge wages for advertising people. So I said, get rid of everybody, fire everybody. David and I can do this for you. We saved them probably $200,000 for a couple of years. And then they still decided that they were wanting to sell it. And I guess it was Fate. They offered me. So the bank and I bought it. And I remember walking out of the building that day after I had signed the papers. Kurt and Mary Fuller had both passed on into the spirit world at that time. And I'm kind of a quack psychic, I call myself. Sometimes I see and hear and feel things, but I could definitely feel and almost see Mary and Kurt Fuller above me, and they were scolding me. I thought they'd be glad I bought it because my intentions were really pure to keep Fate true to its essence of what it was, and they were saying, kind of chattering and scolding and almost swearing at me, but, you know, that I had better do a good job on Fate by gum or else. So I just thought that was cool. Instead of them being, I was like taken aback because here I was trying to do my very best and I was getting scolded for it from spirit.
Okay, so you were getting the impression that they were basically putting you on notice that you better do it right.
Yes. They weren't happy with the direction Llewellyn had taken it.
Okay, so having taken over this publication, and we'll get into more granular details in a moment, what did you do to try to restore it to its former glory?
Well, we didn't do any advertorials. Now, you know, obviously we were working on a shoestring budget. It was a labor of love. I mean, I mortgaged the house to keep it going and plowed everything that we had, our resources. David and I did it, just the two of us. It's kind of interesting to me. Fate seems that it directs itself. It writes itself. Like, say, we get three or four articles in On Crop Circles. that would just come across the transom, letters and unasked for articles, unsolicited. And then I figured, oh, I guess we better write about crop circles. So it's interesting if I listen carefully and pay attention, the magazine almost writes itself. The appropriate articles come in through the door. So it's a matter of being in tune with the, I don't know, the oversoul, the personality of fate. It has some kind of magical being guiding it, because it helps so many people. And my daughter said, get rid of fate. You know, it's losing money. Get rid of it. Sell it. And I just never wanted to do that. I felt that was part of my life's mission. We receive so many letters from people. I can't live without my fate. You know, I get it. I read it from cover to cover. I don't care if it's late, as long as I get it. We hear that over and over and over.
Okay, so let's look now at trying to cope in this environment. Because right now we have a situation where print magazines are dying. Most recently, UFO magazine gave up the ghosts, as they say. But it's much more complicated, and I hardly even want to mention that, except that it's another publication, an example of something that's no longer available. Have you thought, Phillips, of just going all digital?
We have digital also. We have... I guess I'm kind of committed. I've cleaned it down to bare bones. I put it on newsprint paper. We went black and white. We made it a lighter paper so that I could afford the postage. I've done everything I can to shave costs, to make it affordable for the loyal print subscribers. I mean, many of them are an older crowd. They don't even have a freaking computer. They don't want to read it online. They have no way of... So we have assured them that we will always have a print edition. I grew up in a Scandinavian household in North Dakota on a farm, and we were practical, if nothing else. We made do with what we had. So I guess my little Scotch-Irish blood in me, too, helps. We're as thrifty as I possibly can be to keep it in print. And, yes, we have a wonderful new website, and we have e-subscribers. And we're encouraging e-subscribers because it's beautiful and full color and easy to read. But we have those die-hard people that are – I can't let them down.
Phyllis Galdi of Fate Magazine, Jerome Clark also joining us. More to come. You're in
the Paracast.
Great minds think alike. The network for the independent minded. The Genesis Communications Network. GCN.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
We all know that Berkey water purification systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey guy offers amazing specials for Berkey water filtration systems. The Berkey light systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey light system today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, this is Steve Sanchez, and based on a recent study, it was found that 57 million Americans had legal issues over the last 12 months, but only 60% of those studied sought out the services of a lawyer. Why? In a nutshell, affordability. Well, my friends at Legal Shield have created a solution that can help you not if, but when you need an attorney. For as little as $17 per month, Legal Shield will provide you unlimited access to qualified attorneys at an accomplished law firm for advice and counsel on legal issues, no matter how serious or trivial. For over 40 years and with 1.4 million families across North America, Legal Shield can help you, the loyal GCN listener. Representatives are standing by now to answer your questions, so call them now at 1-855-340-SAVE. That's 1-855-340-7283, or visit them at lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com.
Results will vary from case to case.
It's no secret that silver is one of the oldest known natural antibiotics, but the mainstream media will never tell we the people this information. Why? Many drug companies and politicians have dangerous alliances that manipulate the way we live by prescribing drugs that only manage disease, keeping us dependent on Big Pharma. And with Obamacare at our doorstep, we are now forced into a system that many of us do not want any part of. And no man or government has the right to dictate how we as free people choose to take care of our health. The Patriots at UtopiaSilver.com hold this truth dear. Colloidal and ionic silver supplements from UtopiaSilver.com open the door to a whole new world of natural healing for the body and the mind. Visit UtopiaSilver.com and discover the safe and effective health benefits of colloidal and ionic silver. Call 888-213-4338. 888-213-4338. And talk to the Patriots at UtopiaSilver.com, a leading source of natural healing using colloidal silver, colloidal gold, minerals, vitamins, and herbs. UtopiaSilver.com.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
So Chris O'Brien's on special assignment, and he'll be back next week, and we'll be doing a special episode about his book called Stalking the Herd. But right now we're focusing on Fate Magazine, which first started in 1948, and now being published by Phyllis Galdi, is continuing as a print magazine, but also as a digital publication. Now, obviously, there aren't many people around who started reading Fate in 1948, and we understand that. But do you find that your audience demographic is remaining older? How do you get young people, Phyllis, to want a magazine like Fate?
Well, we are on a lot of radio shows, and we are starting Fate Radio up again. We've had various radio announcers through the years, so we definitely have exposure. We attend conferences. We send out many, many issues for people who haven't heard of Fate. I would say we have a fair exposure in the metaphysical and New Age and UFO world with Fate's presence.
Let's go back to the beginning again and Jerry Clark. Now, looking at Fate through the years, it's always been a mixed bag of different stuff. Sometimes you get into archaeologically related stuff, ancient astronauts, UFOs, various occult issues. Now, how do you straddle the fence about all those different subjects? How did Fate handle it in a way that the people who just want UFOs could pick up that magazine and see someone who is talking about ghosts but not be turned off?
Well, in those days, there really were not any other outlets for people who were interested in these subjects. And I mean, obviously there were, as you well know, small newsletters and things like that that circulated to, you know, a few hundred readers. But there wasn't the television programming, there wasn't the radio programming, the newspapers didn't pay much attention to these things except to publish an occasional sneering article. You know, if you were interested in these things, you know, you could find a few books, but if you wanted a magazine that kept you up to date on what was going on in a broad range of mysterious phenomena, Fate Magazine was where you had to go. For one thing, people who were interested in UFOs also often had an interest in a wide range of weird stuff like ESP or ghosts or cryptozoological animals or mysterious disappearances. those sorts of things. So if someone had a primary subject that he was interested in, he could find that, but he could also find all kinds of things that that person had a secondary interest in. So, and also, even if he were just interested in UFOs or just interested in cryptozoology or just interested in ghosts, you could find that in Fate magazine and you couldn't find it anywhere else. So even if you didn't read anything else, you read the articles on the subject of your particular interest. So Fate was, you know, filled a real hole in the market back in those days. There just wasn't anywhere else to go.
At the beginning here, Fate was founded by Ray Palmer and Curtis Fuller. Now, we know that Mr. Fuller had a pretty scientific bent. We know Palmer can get out there. How was this handled in the early days when you had two publishers who probably had very different ideas of the kind of content they might have wanted?
Well, in the early days, it was all Ray Palmer. Kurt Fuller was dealing with his wife, Mary, who had tuberculosis, was in a tuberculosis sanitarium. They had two small children. And so Kurt was working at Flying Magazine as the editor, and he was doing that full-time, at the same time being, you know, full-time father and caregiver to these little kids while dealing with his wife's issues while she was in the sanitarium. So he had turned Fate over pretty much entirely to the Palmer, which is, and much of what was written in those early issues, maybe the first couple of years, first 3 years, was Palmer under a variety of pseudonyms. And some of the stories, I think, Palmer just made up, and he published them under made-up names, and the factual content was zero. When I was working at Fate, I went through the files of the early years of the magazine, and in the later years, if you wanted to find out where a story came from, you could read the documentation, the correspondence with the writer, and other supporting evidence. There was zero. From those early days, there was no evidence that these things existed as independent entities outside Palmer's imagination. And when Kurt became more actively involved in the magazine and Mary's health was restored, both Kurt and Mary had journalistic backgrounds. They had both been educated in the journalism department at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, which is a pretty classy outfit. So they were concerned that even though the content from many people's points of view was outlandish, they wanted it to be factually founded and plausibly affirmed. And so, for example, they didn't publish, I think very early on during the Palmer years, I think there was an article about the Shaver mystery, which was this outlandish series of stories told by Richard Shaver, who had spent years in the mental institution but claimed that there were these demonic entities living in caverns under the earth and causing all kinds of trouble for us. This was really where Palmer made his mark as a marketeer of weird stories. There was one Shaver mystery story under Palmer's editorship of Fate. There were none afterwards. The Fullers cleaned out some of the really, you know, crazy and hard-to-believe stuff. And the stuff they told, they wanted some kind of documentation. It wasn't on the New Yorker level, but they insisted on affidavits, particularly when people were claiming, you know, their own experiential, you know, phenomena. And, you know, so it was reasonably factual. The Fullers often told me that they had a strong feeling that their readers didn't want to be insulted, that the readers had to feel that Fate was playing by the rules and was respecting their intelligence. I think that really had a lot to do with giving Fate credibility in its readership. Other magazines didn't do that, and they didn't last as long as Fate did.
All right. Now, at what point did the Fullers assert the controls? Did this mean that basically Palmer was out of the picture or what?
Palmer moved up to I can't remember the name of the county, but he moved up into this kind of recreational area in Wisconsin, Portage County. They moved up to Portage County, which is kind of a touristy area. And they lived in near a little tiny town called Amherst. And Palmer concentrated sort of on being a small town businessman. And the Fuller stayed in suburban Chicago, and they were running the operation. And at some point about 1954, 55, they bought Palmer's interest in the magazine. So Palmer had, after that point, had no association, you know, either on the editorial side or on the business side with Fate.
Now, as a practical matter, once Palmer was out of the picture, did sales go up? Was there some noticeable impact?
Well, the magazine, I can't give you sales figures because that really wasn't part of the normal discourse at the office. We were just trying to get an issue out there. And any conversation about the history of the magazine was, you know, extraneous, although we had those occasional conversational asides. But the magazine began as a quarterly. By 1951, I believe, it had become a bi-monthly, and then soon it was a monthly. So that was indicating that it found an audience and there was enough to support a publication every month.
Now, I recall that Palmer had his own group of magazines, one of which was almost a direct-on competitor to Fate called Search. We'll go into more of this stuff. We have Jerome Clark, Phyllis Galdi, and we'll be answering your question shortly. You're in
the Paracast.
Not just an alternative to the mainstream media. We're the premier independent talk radio network. We are GCN.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Freudian phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO@WebTV.net. That's MrUFO@WebTV.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Hey everyone, have you heard about the no-no hair removal device that's sweeping the globe? If you want to go weeks without shaving and get smooth, professional, quality results, here's our favorite host, Cheryl, for no-no hair removal.
Thanks. Hey gals, I love talking about my no-no. It's this cute little hair removal system that you can take with you and use almost anywhere at home or on the road. No more expensive in-office treatments, painful waxing, and no more wasting your valuable time. Got unwanted facial hair? No-no has patented Thermacon technology that works on all hair and skin colors, so it's perfect for using on all body parts. And now you can take advantage of this incredible risk-free trial. Get the No-No, the facial kit, a travel case, and a $100 discount shopping card, and you don't risk a penny to try it. Try the incredible No-No hair completely risk-free. Call 1-800-953-6062. That's 800-953-6062. 800-953-6062.
I will never forget the day my son Jeremy told me he hated me and slammed the door in my face. I'm behavioral therapist Janet Lehman. Behavior problems can turn the child you love and your life into a nightmare. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the step-by-step program that shows you how to fix the worst behavior problems and get your child to respect and listen to you again. No matter what the behavior, defiance, backtalk, angry outbursts, disrespect, we can help you stop it. Now you can get the Total Transformation for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. You can keep it forever for free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now 1-888-912-1595. 1-888-912-1595. That's 1-888-912-1595. 1-888-912-1595.
Hello, it's Tom Chenault from The Tom Chenault Show. We are experts in home-based business and residual income. We show people how to make money from their home, either part-time or full-time. And in partnership with Genesis Communication Network, we've organized a team to fight back about people not having money, time, or health. And we need your help. What we want you to do is, if you've got an interest in building an organization to fight back against people taking our money, taking our time, and taking our help, we want to talk to you. All you need to do is call this number, 855-308-8326. Again, all you want to do is call 855-308-8326. You can make a tremendous amount of money and end up fighting for a great cause. Please call us right now.
This is Kurt Sutton, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
So, Chris O'Brien is on special assignment. We have Phyllis Galdi, editor-publisher of Faith Magazine, Jerome Clark, UFO historian, and once someone who worked with Faith. So when Palmer moved up to Amherst, and I visited his home when I was very young, long story, he came out with his own line of publications, one called Flying Saucers, one called Search, and it seemed to me, Jerry, that Search was intended to be the competitor to Faith.
Well, its original title was Mystic, as you may recall.
Sure.
And he changed the title to Search, was it called?
Search.
Yeah, in a few years later. Yes, it was an inferior version of Fate. It didn't have the strong editorial content that Fate did. It was just, I always thought myself that he was publishing things for the Ray Palmer fan club. And he believed that he had a fan club, and he did. He just, I think, overestimated the size of it, which is why his operation, which was basically built around his personality and his kind of freewheeling editorials and enthusiasms, you know, got him only a few thousand readers. He never really topped that. There's a couple of very good biographies of Ray Palmer out in the last couple of years that tell the whole story. Fred Natus wrote one of them. Richard Toronto wrote another, called The War Over Lemuria, which I review in the current issue of Fate, by the way.
Well, as you know, Richard Toronto was on our show around that time when the book first came out to tell us a fascinating story of early science fiction, Ray Palmer, Richard Shaver, and all the wild things. But I agree with you that if you look at this statement that a magazine always had to file if they're using second-class postage, they had to file the statement showing how many copies they printed, how many copies they sold, how many were sold on newsstands. They had to basically reveal their circulation. And you'd see that Fate, you know, had a pretty big circulation. Palmer was sending out a few thousand copies.
Yeah, that's right. I think that Fate at its height, which was in the 1970s, I think had a circulation of more than 200,000. But Ray Palmer never got close to that. And his magazines really weren't that interesting unless you were also into, you know, some kind of Palmer enthusiasm like the Shaver Mystery or the Hollow Earth or something. But I never really saw the charm of Ray Palmer. I know a lot of people disagree with that, and God bless them. But to me, he was just some kind of, you know, just some kind of hustler. And I never, like a carnival barker. And I just didn't ever believe anything that he said. I mean, if he had told me the sun was shining, I'd have looked out the window to be sure. But he was a character. I mean, he was harmless. He wasn't hurting anybody. Maybe scaring some people, but that was about it.
Well, Maury Island scared some people.
Yeah, and the Shaver Mystery scared some people.
But Maury Island especially, because we're talking about something that happened. We're talking about the fact that he got a third party, Kenneth Arnold, involved in going out there and investigating it, and you had all these crazy things that were going on at the time. So at least something there was interesting to follow up. It may have been a hoax.
Yeah, I mean, it was a hoax, but it was, you know, like so many hoaxes, an unkillable one. There are still people promoting it. But it was just cooked up by a con man named Fred Chrisman. And, you know, and I don't think even Palmer really believed it ever. But he saw it was a chance to promote things. And one thing that gets people's attention is conspiracy theories and paranoia. And Palmer knew that, and he played on that. But I think that Palmer always had Fred Chrisman's number.
Of course, Palmer also got shot down in a book called The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects by Edward Ruppelt, who had once headed Project Blue Book. He called him the Chicago publisher and referred to this as being, what, one of the worst hoaxes in history?
Well, it was, because a couple of Air Force officers were killed in a plane crash while they were investigating it. And Ruppelt was understandably upset about this.
The big concern, of course, is that plane crashes could occur anyway, but they didn't have to go there.
They were on a bomber that was notoriously susceptible to crashes. It was not a very well-built aircraft. And also, the two officers, their names are Brown and Davidson, had concluded that this was just a nonsensical hoax, and they were on their way back to the Air Force base from which they had flown to, you know, tell their superiors as much, that this is just a crude hoax and not bother with it. And, of course, there's tragic deaths get incorporated into the conspiracy theories and the paranoia and the, you know, the claim that they were killed because they knew too much, which is just not verifiable in any historical sense. But it's a good story.
Right.
Palmer always knew good stories.
Right. And the way he had set up in the book, The Coming of the Saucers, you almost thought that Kenneth Arnold was living through an X-Files scenario many, many years before there was a program called The X-Files. I kind of wonder, when you think of things like Maury Island, whether TV shows like The X-Files in certain ways owe so much to that sort of thing.
Well, the Men in Black make their first appearance in the Maury Island story.
Sure.
And so, you know, a lot followed from that in terms of the, you know, the mythology surrounding the early flying saucer era.
And, of course, when you want to talk about any sort of conspiracy theory about secrecy, well, there you go.
Yeah. No, it's a great story. I've always been surprised that no one has ever made a movie around the Maury Island story. It's a great story. But if you read Arnold and Palmer's book, The Coming of the Saucers, and read Arnold's account carefully, not his editorial interpretations, but just read what's going on, it's very clear that he's being lied to. And that Arnold, who was naive because he grew up with people who didn't lie, you know, whose word was their bond, but these guys are lying to him. And if you read that, it's clear that that's what they're doing. And Arnold just isn't catching on to that because, you know, of his kind of conservative Western cultural background. He didn't realize that there were, you know, pathological liars out there.
The only thing that troubled me about that whole book and what happened is the incident where his plane lost power because this power switch was turned off accidentally. And that seemed to infuse the paranoia of the episode.
Right. It reminds me of a line in a Bob Dylan song. Take what you have gathered from coincidence. And that's really where all conspiracy theories start.
The question always is it just a coincidence or something?
There are just coincidences. And also, you look at anything, and reality is such that it doesn't have clear and sharp lines. Some of the lines are kind of ragged, and little things happen in the context of a larger narrative that don't quite fit. They don't unravel the whole narrative, usually. But nothing is completely clear-cut. If some complicated experience is going to happen, and you're trying to reconstruct it, there are always going to be pieces that don't quite fit. But the significance you want to attach to them is something else. And, you know, there are curiosities in the story that we hear about Maury Island, but the larger reality is that even his kids and the kids of Harold Ball testified that Chrisman was just a guy who made up stuff and was always involved in one scam or another. Remember, this guy had written Palmer earlier and claimed to have shot his way with a machine gun out of a cavern full of menacing Tiros with these demonic entities in the Shaver mystery. Now, I don't believe that the Shaver mystery is true, or that Tiros exist, or that Fred Chrisman shot his way out of a cave. So why should I believe his story about Maury Island? Particularly since the UPI reporter, I think it was United Press in those days, interviewed Harold Dahl at the time it happened. Harold Dahl was Chrisman's associate, and Dahl confessed that it was a hoax after his wife waved a knife at him and said, "Tell its reporter the truth." You know, that's all part of the record.
But the way you can take a story like that, and it becomes a legend in the UFO field. And I knew one guy, and he's no longer around, so I won't make a big deal of it. But he was actually investigating Chrisman to see if there was something more to his life. It gets very complicated. Jerome Clark, once an editor of Fate Magazine, a UFO historian. Phyllis Galdi, the editor and publisher of Fate Magazine. You're in
the Paracast.
Free from the shackles of corporate America, we're the place for independent thinkers. GCN.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
For years, you've been hearing about Herbal Healer Academy and how it's remained the leader in effective, alternative, and natural medicine and education. But how can they continue to hold that title for years on end? The answer is high quality and huge selection. Just visit herbalhealer.com and shop online or request a free catalog. You're bound to find the alternative you're looking for. Did you know that Herbal Healer carries the latest, safest, and effective weight loss products? You can also count on Herbal Healer for the largest selection of safe and natural supplements just for children. And don't forget your pets. Herbal Healer even has natural mineral supplements for all your animals, including horses, cows, and birds. Take a peek at their online calendar, and you're sure to find everything you need and maybe something you didn't realize you needed. Visit HerbalHealer.com and don't forget to sign up for the free Herbal Healer newsletter. HerbalHealer.com, working with the power of nature.